Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 220. It's that time of the year, folks. It's time for Pockets of ADP. Five episodes coming your way to get you ready from ADP 100 and beyond to navigate through your drafts, as it is a couple weeks left in draft season before we kick things off. Before we get to all that, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/Bubba Bloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how you doing, my friend?
Fantastic. For a couple of reasons. One, I'm excited for this series. We've done the Pockets of ADP for a couple of years now, but we kind of do that last like couple of weeks search through the player pool, those middle rounds, those late rounds, to get everybody going. And we kind of take it at a different angle, right? Because we did all the position previews. It's comparing position to position kind of in a vacuum. But now we go at it another way by looking at the entire draft in 50-round pockets to kind of see where you want to attack and when. So I think it's a good exercise for us and hopefully out there for you as well. Other reason I'm excited is we just started game planning our trip to Las Vegas, which, as Kevin in the chat here says, less than 2 weeks to Las Vegas, LFG. Yeah, so we've got some fun stuff planned for Las Vegas. That's going to be we are drafting on Sunday, but neither of us are in the main event or the CLQ or anything like that, but we're going to be doing some fun coverage around that. So more to come, but I'm excited.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. Like, the one behind the scenes I'll give, I guess, is the wonderful people at the NFPC, they're working with us because they want us to bring a lot of that excitement to the weekend. So we're trying to get some cool stuff planned out. Rob D will be doing the CLQ draft on Friday night, but we'll be around Friday and Saturday bringing in some coverage to it. It's not going to be live per se, but it'll be coming to your podcasting ears soon enough thereafter, whenever I'm available to physically do it. That's what I can't guarantee you, because I don't know what time we'll get back to the rooms every night and whatnot, but sleep will be a priority on that trip because I'm old and Vegas does not treat me the same way like it once does. So you'll get it soon enough, but it'll be pretty sweet. So quite excited. Yeah.
We're worried about that Airbnb we're sharing. That's gonna be another place that I'm sure those walls can talk, but
it's going to be a place to sleep for like 5 hours and take a shower and go back to the hotel. It's going to come down.
Hopefully more than five, but you're right. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm not crossing my fingers on that, but yes, hopefully more than five, probably not Saturday night. I know that much. All right. A couple other bits of announcement besides the Pockets ADP and besides Vegas, that's going to be awesome, is we mentioned it a little bit on a recent show. We mentioned it on the Patreon only episode that dropped on Thursday. If you're a Patreon member, we did our little pitching debates for you all, about a half hour show. They're debating five pitchers between the two of us. But what we did say on that show for sure is we're starting the Pockets of ADP tonight, and instead of two shows next week, Ryan, we're giving them four shows. We're covering all of the Pockets of ADP next week, and by the end of the week you'll have all five shows banked for your final two big weekends of draft season beforehand, because in reality, if we did two shows a week, we wouldn't finish by the start of the season.
Out of time.
You're getting four shows next week. Two will be live as usual on Tuesday and Thursday evening, and then the other two will be in between there to knock it out for you, a little pre-recorded action. Just the only way to physically make it work for y'all. So you get them all next week.
Yep. Final stretch, final sprint. We talk every year like it is so freaking crazy for both of us right now, just with everything going on in drafts. But it's temporary. We're going to, while we're in it, we're going to go all out. And then I know once the season comes, but it's just a different cadence during the season. It's a little bit more regular. So,
yep. A little bit more regular. It's a Bloom Board show and it's a Fab show. It's a Bloom Board. It's a little more structured.
No more 5 hour marathon streams multiple nights a week.
Yeah. And that's one of the funny things from the show we did on Patreon earlier that made me laugh, is we're talking about all the content we want to put out there. We're going to Vegas to do this. We're having fun and all these aspects of it. And we still have to book like our final three drafts. We haven't even like scheduled those somewhere in the mix of all of that just yet. So that'll be exciting as well.
Yeah. Your guy signed an extension tonight. The Law Dog.
Got a 7-year deal. I'm pumped for it.
Not much.
7-year, I think it's like 66, something like that. Yeah, which I know Michael Cicchini in the chat here and the Discord says he's going to be 31. He wouldn't have signed it, but it's kind of a combination of He wants that avoid the arbitration years, and it's kind of just a stability thing. They did it with Rooker, who's obviously older than Law Dog. I'm not ignoring that, but you know, Butler's done it for a half a season. You're going to cash in type thing. You might as well cash in and see where it goes from there. And if he's good, he'll be 31. He can still get one more big contract. Look at all these guys in their early 30s getting paid right now. So if he produces, he still has a big one coming his way.
Yeah, and it's he's got one. I mean, he's still in pre-arb years. So 2020, this year is, or next year is pre-arb for Butler. Then it's three more arbitration years. He's not a free agent until 2030. So they basically bought out his arbitration years plus a couple others. So that's what they did. Like you said, it's exactly what they did with Rooker.
Yep. And we're that's like what the Rays have done with all their guys for years. It's just what teams that don't like to spend money, this is how they have to do it if they're going to do it. So have to is probably not the right word because they can spend more money, but you know what I'm trying to say here. And I'm glad the A's are at least doing it because the idea of having Rooker and Law Dog locked down for a little while is a plus. It is a plus. So yeah. I'll take it. That's for sure. All right. I think that wraps up our announcements for now. Let's get into some pockets of ADP, Ryan. I think I'll hit the button for you here.
new StreamYard feature scenes. Yes. He's afraid to press the button. It worked.
It's not on a legal pad. I don't know what to do right now. It's crazy. But yeah, here we are. We're looking at the pockets of ADP 100 through 150. Ryan, the floor is yours to explain what we are looking at here.
Okay, so this is going to be, this is the format for all of our pocket episodes. I have taken basically by ADP, or the ADP we're looking at is March NFBC 12 teamers. So this is pretty fresh. This is 10 drafts since March 1st. We are looking at all the hitters there's two boards here. On the left side, all the hitters ordered by ADP from 100 down to 150. And on the right side is all the pitchers ordered by ADP from 100 through 150. And similar to what we did with our position previews is I took the projections. I believe this is Steamer and the Bat. Combined those. And for hitters, we're going to look at average, homers, and steals. And then pitchers, ERA, whip, strikeouts, and saves. So you can just kind of get a glance look. I'll post this out when I post the promo for the show on Twitter and Blue Sky on Friday. But similar to our position previews, it just shows where certain categories might be had, where they're not. It definitely shows out on the pitcher side, like which closes are available in this pocket. I think just kind of gives us a general feel for where things are at a macro level at this portion of the draft.
Yeah, one of the big takeaways I have every year from these pockets of ADP that stick in my head as I get my late drafts in, and we'll talk about them on these shows, obviously, is like for the position hitters, what are the main categories in this range? Because as you get deeper into drafts, there's going to be some categories that are non-existent, some that you can focus on, like catch-up and homers or steals or whatever. It also helps me categorize positions because we'll talk about, like when we did our previews, there are certain positions that dry up at certain parts or, you know, outfield you want kind of too early, too middle, like at least like one late type ideas. So you start to find the pockets. Is it 1 through 150? Is it 100 through 200? Like what are the pockets? You need to make sure to focus on those. And at the same time, it pivots to the starting pitching side of things where, you know, we talk about these like kind of 2 to 3 globs that hang out in the pitching world. Mm-hmm. And so it tells you, like, this is a really good glob for strikeouts, or this is a really good glob for the last remaining ratio guys. So maybe don't focus on hitters in this region and focus on the pitchers, so on and so forth, as you're building your draft. Because it's like, you know, Ryan always talks about you start in the, you know, middle rounds is how you start to focus on the draft room and build things. And some people like to build backwards, so on and so forth. When you're building backwards, it's because you're looking at stats and positions. So that's kind of what you're looking on, how you can build things. And that's why we're focused on this. We all know how the top like 3-4 rounds look. We're not foolish in that regard. We know elite batting averages early, 5 category guys, shortstops early, all these kind of things we've talked about. We know that. So how do we build off of that? And that's what these pockets are for. And that's it's one of the more valuable, I guess, 5 episodes that I absolutely love, because I'll take it with me in my final drafts every time. Just it enables me to, the joke always is like, you know, Ryan has his spreadsheets and stuff and I show up with what's between my ears. It's because we do these shows. Like we do enough of these things where I know the pool, I have a good idea. I can walk in and navigate a minefield if I have to without having a full arsenal of stuff. So that's my brief synopsis of what we're about to take part in coming up here.
No, I think you bring up a great point of working from the middle forward. Notice we're not doing an ADP 0 to 50, ADP 50 to 100 show. I learn your targets in these middle rounds and build around that. And you may not have the same targets that we do. You may target our fades, which may be a winning strategy in some years.
More often than not, yeah.
More often than not, but we're going to hit on a bunch of these players. But just in terms of your own prep, I think this is where you should focus the most. Focus on the names here that these middle round breakouts are the ones that are going to get you in the money more. In my opinion, more so than the early round ones, because they're kind of all good in the early rounds. Focus on the ones you like here, and then build around that in the early rounds and the end game. So that's hopefully the goal of the info that we will provide you with these next four or five shows.
And for those that aren't in the Discord, I know we always tweet out questions, but something like the algorithm or something, questions just don't come in anymore. Maybe you guys just don't care.
Maybe people don't care anymore. Yeah, like Twitter, we used to get a bunch of listener questions from Twitter.
I don't get them like any of my shows anymore. Yeah. They're just like all gone. So it's the algorithm or what, but like the Discord always has a bunch. But to my point, if you aren't in the Patreon Discord and you are going to listen to these shows, be prepared. Give us questions on these pockets. We will definitely. It helps add to the show, because like we have our structure we're going to talk about, but it's only going to technically highlight like a third of this window. So if you have serious questions, like you can literally go to the ADP page right now. We're going to use it for the next four episodes after this. Like start picking it apart and bring those to us, because we're here to kind of help everybody ramp up to the finish line.
If you don't have social, we do have a. Gmail address, email address, yes. bubblebloompod@gmail.com, bubblebloompod@gmail. So send us a question there. Kevin says, why send a question? We're all here. Some of you all are here, which we appreciate. So yes. Any questions while we're going, of course, in the chat, we'll hit those as well.
All right. So let's get cracking here. You have the picture, the board split up to hitting and pitching, which is very, very convenient, of course. So let's focus on the hitting side first, Ryan, as we always like to talk kind of takeaways when we look at this before we talk individual players here. And it's the beauty of the coloring makes it like highlight certain things right out the gate in these scenarios. So I'll let you have the floor first. What do you notice hitting wise when we look at this pocket of 100 to 150?
So my biggest takeaway is you could kind of take the hitting board, look at the top half of it, look at the bottom half. It's Oregon Duck Green for batting average at the top half. It's mostly Rare Steak Red at the bottom half for batting average. And to me, that kind of goes along with what I've been saying, really, we've both been saying this draft season, it is tough to get batting average later on. You can see that right around the 125 ADP mark, 125 and later with this group, you cannot find a good projected batting average outside of Stephen Kwan at a 137 ADP, Xavier Edwards at a 138 ADP, and depending on what you think of them, Ezekiel Tovar projected for 260, Tyler Stevenson projected for 255, which a catcher is good, but that's it. And I would even argue that Stephen Kwan and Xavier Edwards set you back in other categories. And then you start to get into that whack-a-mole game where, oh crap, I just drafted Xavier Edwards. I have a middle infield position projected for four home runs. Now I need power. So to me, that's the biggest takeaway on the hitter side, is that pretty much flip in projected batting average from good to bad, pretty much halfway through this group, like right at ADP 125. So it's just more kind of ammo for me to say, build up that batting average early, because it does give you more flexibility later on in these middle rounds.
Yeah. And to add to that, there's power kind of throughout, like 15 plus home run power. You can find pretty much all these guys. So there's not really a power drain for most of it. Obviously Edwards and Kwan aren't going to give you the power. A comment to your whack-a-mole thing: as we continue these episodes, it turns into whack-a-mole. So you kind of don't want to do it right now, is another part of what Ryan was hinting at here. You got like at least a lot of four category guys. Next episode or the one after, you have a lot of three category guys, and it just continues to go that direction. So that's the point, is you don't really want to if you don't have to. But again, one thing we'll preface, or I'll preface for sure, is there's always a million ways to build a team. Like, I'm always anti Luis Arraez. We've seen guys with Luis Arraez win main events and stuff. Like, it's doable. It's definitely doable. Just not something I'm built for. To your point about the top half batting average, bottom half not so much, steals are almost flipped. It's a lot more Rare Steak Red on the top, and steals are on the bottom. So it's a lot of these guys that have like, and to be fair, a lot of these averages that are rare stake right on the bottom are like 240 to 250. So it's not like they're complete drains. They're not great by any means, but they're not like bottoming out on you. They're not Shea Bangaliers hitting, you know, 220. But a lot of these guys give you 20 plus steals. Like you have Xavier Edwards, who's over 30 steals. You got Pete Crow Armstrong, Randy Rosarena, Anthony Volpe, Josh Lowe, even Bryce Turang, Jason Dominguez is almost at 20. So all those guys are 20 plus steal upside in this range as well. So again, it's the point. There's still like three or four category guys here. It's just which category you're sacrificing. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to, again, we're not covering the top 100 picks, but something you said a lot, I've said in many others, there's a reason we look for those high batting average guys early. And that's why when we talk like Ellie De La Cruz, it's like, yeah, he's awesome. But if he hits 260 again, now you get to this pocket of the draft, mm-hmm. it makes it a lot harder to go take like a Randy Rosarena or some guys like that, where you could definitely fill those spots in if you go elsewhere early on type situations. So yeah, more stolen bases at the bottom, but it's a correlation to lack of batting average.
Yeah. So I think and I've heard this elsewhere, like you can find speed later, especially since the rule changes, that sort of thing. And this does kind of show that it's just, it comes with warts. And which warts are you okay with? Are you okay with a Bryce Turang, Stephen Kwan, Xavier Edwards type of wart that comes with that speed where you're not getting much average? Or, I mean, there's Randy Rosarena, there's Anthony Volpe, Josh Lowe. They get you some power, might hurt you in batting average. But so just know, like, yes, you can get speed, and you even have options to like which wart you want to take on when you grab that speed in this group, which is also kind of a nice thing when you're building out a roster.
And then on the flip side of this hitting thing, not statistically wise, and you know, it took me almost 17 minutes, but this
catchers?
Yes, there's six catchers in this range. And
true. Yes,
we're going to talk about one that you put down as a target because it's a player that I keep saying I want as my catcher too. Like it's one of like at very worst, he's my final catcher one, but I want as a catcher too. And that's Tyler Stevenson. He's up pick one. He's ADP 150. Like in my perfect world, I am not drafting a catcher after this pocket. That's kind of how I want to leave drafts. Now I've taken Kyber Ruiz. I've taken Austin Wells. Like there's guys I've taken, but I'm emphasizing if you are a wait on catcher guy, I wouldn't wait too much longer for at least your first catcher in this range that stands out in a big, big way.
Yep, with Logan Ohapi at 135, JTR at 144, Francisco Alvarez and Tyler Stevenson basically 150. I full agree.
So that stood out as well. Anything else positionally that stands out? Yeah, there's a lot of corner infield early in the round. Not too much.
Still good outfielders available at this point. I'm guessing maybe our next show, maybe two shows, we'll start talking about when that outfield cliff hangs. But outside of that, no, I think the catcher takeaway, unfortunately, since that's your jam, is the proper position to highlight with hitters.
Kevin Hastings says catchers and K's on pitcher's side. We'll get to that in a second, but that's this range. And Michael Cicchini says Bubba snipe me on Stevenson and TGFBI. He's true to his word. Yeah, I say it time and time again. I'll put my money where my mouth is on these things, and I back it up for most of the time. All right, flip side. Pitching, what are you noticing when you see here? Because there's actually still a decent amount of green, at least in certain categories.
Yeah, I don't know. I struggle with how to tackle the pitching side. I guess we'll start with the relievers. There are, because it is so easy to see where the relievers are going in this group, there are five of them. So you've got Robert Suarez at 101, Jeff Hoffman, 113, Tanner Scott, 119, Trevor McGill, 143, David Bednar at 146. I have beaten this drum throughout draft season. I don't really like, I don't want to say any of those guys. Like Robert Suarez, if he doesn't get traded, maybe I like, I don't mind Hoffman at 113. Outside of that, I don't really like any closers going here. And again, this is just an example of look at these, analyze these middle rounds, dictate how that runs your first few rounds. That is why both of us really are taking one of those top seven closers in almost every draft, because I'll speak for you. We feel this part of the draft for closers is pretty soft.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. I will say you helped me out by making me a bloom board for ADP that we put on Patreon. And like Robert Suarez has been falling in drafts, which is interesting because of the trade rumors.
Big time.
Yep. Hoffman's on the way up, of course. Scott's been on the way up. McGill's falling. Bednar's been on the way up. There's been a lot of moving and shaking with closers over the last 2 months. A lot of moving and shaking. And so this is where, like Ryan said, it's soft. It's real soft. The top 100 has our six or seven guys we're good to go into battle with. Like you can see, Ryan Walker's not in this range anymore, and he used to be. So you need to get one of, if you like to get the elites, you got to go early. And this is almost a range to avoid personally. And if for the relief pitcher twos, I think the next pocket might be more my wheelhouse for that. I'm not opposed to a couple of these guys, but Hoffman I could live with. I don't love Bednar. I'm starting to find a little bit of interest in, but again, not love. But most of these guys, I'm willing to just kind of wait for the Jansons and Finnegans of the world and see where that plays out. So I'm with you on that one.
What do you think on the starting pitchers? I'll jump the gun and let you answer first.
For me, it's kind of like Kevin Hastings said. It's a ton of strikeouts compared to where it goes later on. Like we have, it's easier to do the relievers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's them. But all the starting pitchers are targeted for at least 150 strikeouts. And the ones that are at 150, like Sasaki, Strider, we know their innings limits issues. McClanahan, like those guys are all better than K-Prime, Alcantara. Like we know those guys are better than that if they get the innings type deal. But you got Sonny Gray at 187 in this range. You got Flaherty close to 180 if you think he stays healthy. But Big Freddy at 197, Castillo, who I don't know how he's predicted for 182, Hunter Green, 189, Bybee Brown. There's a lot of dudes at 170 plus, which is – so these are your SP3s, hopefully, at least in this range. It maybe fours if you're extra aggressive. But this is a great range to keep tacking on strikeouts because those will disappear rapidly in your draft.
Even at the bottom, Jared Jones for as many innings as you think he'll go. Jack Flaherty, 178 projected. Carlos Rodon, 189. I mean, if you could, I mean, I know Rodon is your guy at 147. Could be a ton of K's there. And I will say the caveat with starting pitcher projections. I've mentioned this before as well, but like, there's such wide error bars, especially around like ERA and WHIP. Trying to project that stuff is very difficult. So I do take the ratios at least with somewhat of a grain of salt to be like, well, there's not a huge difference over an entire season from like a 3.9 ERA to a 3.5. Like so much of that can just vary on BABIP and left on base and all that stuff. So that's my little spiel about starting pitcher projections.
Yeah, and it is interesting because it's like the bottom third or ratios are much more rare steak red than the rest of the pockets right there.
Yeah.
And we're talking like which would make sense as you go farther down the board. That's fitting. But like you got Gallen, who's been pretty decent in ratios throughout his career. Like if Jones, then it's a lot of what ifs. Like if Sandy's healthy, these ratios probably aren't right. If Jones takes the next step, like there's a lot of what ifs with the pitch ratios to your point you just made a second ago that it's one. And these starts count, but it's like one bad start. You do that bloom board every year. So one bad start could skew this entire projection. Where strikeouts you can kind of count on throughout the season for the most part.
I know I've been taking my SP3 typically in this 100 to 115 range. And there's actually, that's another takeaway. Like there's a crap load of pitchers going from like 100 to 115. Tanner Bibee's been a target of mine. Luis Castillo, even though, you know, he shots fired at Luis Castillo every episode from you, is, I think, pretty stable, yet slight declining. Logan Webb, stable. Freddy Peralta, I think, is pretty stable. There's just a lot of stability at SP3. And then there are other starting pitchers where I don't think they're very stable, but hell, dude, there's a ceiling to Spencer Strider. There's a ceiling to Shane McClanahan. We'll talk about him later. There's a ceiling to Grayson... never mind, not Grayson Rodriguez.
Not anymore.
There's a ceiling to Alcantara, Brian Wu. Like there are if you want to embrace a little bit more variance at starting pitcher and kind of go with, we don't know which pitchers are going to get hurt, I'm going to take the best ones on a per inning basis. You have those options in this group as well. I have not been taking them as frequently as I have the old boring guys because that's how I draft. But you do have kind of the option to go separate ways here with your SP3.
And here's just like a thought out loud. And again, things can change when we talk about future episodes or whatever, but like looking at this pocket of pitching here, it gives you like the option almost to like go, I know it's not everyone's style, but I know I'm comfortable with it. This is partially why go much more hitter heavy. Cause then you look at this pocket here where we talk about losing batting average or other things for hitters, go get a couple extra hitters early that you can trust and maybe get an ace early if you want. But you could pepper 2 to 3 starters in this range before going to later starters and just don't do hitting as much in this range, if that makes sense out loud. Yep. And it could be an option. Again, you take starting pitching early for the quote-unquote stability, but with injuries and other things, and there's a lot of ceiling guys in this range, like you mentioned, if you just happen to get one out of the 2-hit ceilings or 2 out of the 3 hit ceilings to go with your ace and you took extra hitters early, it's a philosophy that could work, is what I'm trying to say. And that's one thing about looking at these pockets. It's not just looking at hitters and pitchers. It's looking at the whole party and how you can go, okay, I want to focus on pitching in this range of the draft. I want to, like, whatever. And that's an angle you could go with just by looking at these ADPs right here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, all right. Anything else to take away from the boards before we start talking some ADP battles, targets, fades, and the good stuff?
Let's talk about some play. I mean, the general format of this is we're going to do some ADP battles, like basically similar type players, similar projections going around each other, say who we'd rather. And then, we'll talk about our targets and our fades. So we'll flip over to the more player centric portion of the evening.
Our buddy Jason Wenick in the chat here makes me laugh. This makes me want to draft 4 bats, a catcher, and a relief pitcher in my first 6 picks. I don't think that's a bad idea, personally. I really don't. I know it's not for everybody, but I think you can survive. I really do. So what else did we? I wanted to mention a couple of things. Britton Allen thinks Hunter Green and Freddie Peralta are league winners. And Kevin Hastings says, I draft these pitchers more often in auctions because if I spend on hitting, I can get several of these guys to make up for no early pitching. It's a strategy I ensued as well, my friend. It definitely works for you. All right. ADP debates, my friend. So you have the board first. We each did 2 debates. And then, like, again, we'll do 3 targets, 3 fades each to go along the way here. But what is your first debate?
So I try and group these guys in similar positions. I'm bending the rules a little bit with this one, but it's just interesting to see Alex Bregman and Vinny P. So they're both, we'll say, corner infielders, going pretty much, well, Vinny P is going around later than Alex Bregman. 123 ADP for Vinny Pasquantino, and Alex Bregman has a 106 ADP, but basically the exact same projection between those two guys, a mid-260s batting average, low to mid-20s homers, and a couple bags. I'd rather take Vinny Pasquantino. I think even with it, like, I don't know, first base, third base kind of equally start dying. I think I'd take Vinny P over Alex Bregman, but it's just an interesting dichotomy between those two on different sides of their career. Bregman has done this. Bregman can get his projection in his sleep. Vinny Pasquantino has not done this before. So you can kind of take it both ways here. Do you draft on the upside of Vinny P, or do you take the safety of Bregman? I still think I'm going Pasquantino, but curious your thoughts on those two guys, because the projections see them as basically the same dude, even though they're on other ends of their career.
Yeah, there's a couple boring answers here I can give you. Is if you took a chance early, take a Bregman, take the stability, go that direction. Because even for Vinny P, as much as I love him, and I'm going to pick Vinny P in the end of this argument, we still haven't seen him do it for a full season yet. He's had the shoulder issues time and time again. So I'll throw that angle out there if you want. With Bregman, the other plus, and again, I know this is a corner infield debate, should get middle infield at second base here as well, if you want to get real technical about it. So that's a plus going in Bregman's direction. But when it comes to Vinny P, this has been one, Gialdi was all about it last year, and it was going that direction until the shoulder injury again. But then he came back earlier than expected and still hit in the postseason, which was a big plus. He's had a full offseason. He looks good in that regard. Like, I'm not saying he's injury prone, I'm just saying it hasn't happened yet. But with Vinny P, I think there's more power to him, more power than Bregman. I agree they have the same projection. I think there's a better batting average for Vinny P. I think he's more of a 270 that could hit 290 just because he has such a good BABIP. He hits the ball on the ground a lot, which does hamper the home run potential, but I think there is another batting average level to him compared to Bregman, where Bregman's just like a 260, 265. Like, that's what you're going to get. And it's great to have to just write that down. But I think Paxton Skenos has that upside. He's already shown he can drive in 100 RBIs. The top half of that Royals lineup is insane. Not saying Boston's isn't, but Vinny P will be stationed hitting cleanup pretty much to do that damage. And it's just a lot of it's the upside, the unseen of Vinny. We know the skill set's there. Can we get a full season of Vinny Pasquantino being Vinny Pasquantino? And if we do, what's to say he can't crack into like 27 home runs driving 115?
Exactly. If you're
playing for ceiling, Vinny P almost wipes the floor with Bregman personally. But if we're just going off projections and what we've seen so far, that's where it becomes very even.
Yep. Yep. Agreed. Yep. You nailed it.
So yeah, that's where I'm at. So yeah, sorry to cut you off there at the end, but
You're making good points tonight. Are you okay? Everything fine over there?
I told you I had a nice big dinner tonight. So
big dinner. So you're just kind of
tummy's happy. Celsius is cracked. I'm just
brain trying just to
like
not in.
Sound too nasally because my allergies are going bananas right now, and I feel like my head's about to explode. So we're rolling right now.
So that's why you're making sense to me. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I can't think. I'm thinking clearly because it's all tight. I can't jumble things around too much. It's like laser focused up in there. Yeah. To get things out. All right.
Who's your two? I thought this was a really good one. You filled this out before I did on the rundown.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
It stood out to me when looking at the board that these two are sitting next to each other. And that's why it was interesting. So I'm glad you found this one interesting as well. So we got Luis Garcia Jr., someone we've talked about a ton on this show. I know he's a major target of mine. I think you are interested in him. I'm not going to say major target because I don't want to speak for you. But there's also like the caveats, like, do they let him hit enough first lefty, so on and so forth. His ADP is 125, projection 273, 16, 15. You got Bo Bichette coming in with an ADP of 126, projection 276, 17, 11. Bo Bichette, like early in draft season, you couldn't not listen to a show and not get Luis Garcia Jr.'s name coming out. It was everywhere. Now that's Bo Bichette. Everyone's like, he's affordable. It's a bounce back. Yes, we've accepted he's not going to run, so on and so forth. So that's where this debate gets interesting because they're basically same projection. It's a middle infield thing. Like, are you buying the Bichette bounce back? Are you worried about Garcia? Those are the kind of questions. So where do you sit on this this player debate?
Who would you argue has the higher ceiling between the two?
Luis Garcia Jr.
Okay. I disagree. Ooh, I think Bo Bichette has I think your best case, Luis Garcia, Bo Bichette has already done and has already done twice in his career. Granted, maybe a little bit different Bo Bichette, before the injuries, but Bo Bichette has kind of already done what you are wish casting. I'm not saying you, but one is wish casting Luis Garcia to do. And maybe it's not total wish casting. Like, this is somebody who is entering his prime, could definitely improve. It's just, for me, it's Bichette over Garcia. I like Garcia. It's not a slam dunk. I just think Bichette looks healthy. He has tried to, he has attempted a stolen base so far this spring, which I do look at. I do like to see who is actually trying to run this spring. And Bichette was thrown out on that stolen base attempt, but at least he tried.
It's the thought that counts.
It's the thought that counts. It's honestly, it's the willingness to run that counts. I mean, Bo Bichette has had 5 stolen bases each of the last 2 seasons. I think it's a good sign that he's at least willing to run in spring. So I'm going to go Bo Bichette. I think I'm just higher on Bichette than you are, but even more most of the market. I think if Bo Bichette has a healthy season, he's not too far off of the version of him that we saw in 2022, which again, I think is kind of like one of your better case scenarios for Luis Garcia.
Okay. I'm obviously the Luis Garcia side of this one. I think Bichette will be much improved. Obviously, health dictates that. I think Bichette's batting average closer to 300, which should beat Garcia out. I think he's a 20 home run guy, maybe 25. We saw Luis Garcia hit 18 last year in his age 24 season. Bichette's only 27, which is very interesting. He feels like he's old as hell.
That's what I'm saying, dude. Yeah, man.
Garcia, but he got the 18 homers in 140 games. Not saying he can't get to 20 either. Like, to me, we saw Garcia steal 22 bags. You're saying Bichette's done it. He's done it once, 29 and 25. The other one was 24-13. Garcia could do that without a problem, I don't think. But the 29-25, that's where with Garcia, I think we could have another level where we see like 25-30. And that's where he takes Bichette to town to me. Like, he's hit for average throughout the minors. He hit 282 last year, 266, 275. Like, in the minors, he's close to a 300 hitter. So I think he's a legit 280-plus guy. Power continues to develop. Nats run for days, like we've talked about. The biggest thing with Garcia for me is the playing time, which I've been confident in. There's a lot of people that are skeptical about it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, either just in terms of a platoon.
Yeah. Just because of the way they treat him versus lefties, which – for a player of his ilk, I should say, and his age, that's just stupid. But again, I'm not a manager, so we'll see how they do that. We've raved about this Nats lineup for fantasy. We love it. And if he's hitting, and that's the other part, is we've seen him hit towards the top, we've seen him hit fifth. So that could dictate how some of this plays out as well. I just think Garcia's got the ceiling Bichette does not have, because Bichette's just, even if he runs, he's not going for 20 steals again. So agreed.
I think he beats him in power and in batting average. I would push back on the Mets haven't given Garcia a chance to try. It's been over 800 career plate appearances against lefties. It's a 265 on base percentage against lefties for his career. That is awful. If you're in an NFBC half week with Luis Garcia and they play two lefties, like, it's, you're starting him, but like, that's tough, dude. It's a 2% career walk rate against lefties. He has done nothing against lefties his career. And it like I said, it's 843 career plate appearances. Not like the Nationals haven't given him a chance. So I do worry about that with Luis Garcia.
Well, okay, for me, the only thing I'll point out is, and given it's only been like two real seasons with the Nets, I believe, because he was, or was it three full seasons with the Nets? Because prior to that was the Padres. But your point still stands. It's been weird, and like, he walked more in 2023 versus lefties. Like, he had where's his OBP?
He had a 3% walk rate against lefties.
I was looking at a different number. My bad. I was looking at an idiot. But yes, he's not great versus lefties. Okay, fair enough. But
not great is being nice. He's actually horrendous.
What he does better than Bo Bichette is he stays on the field. That's been a plus.
That'll give you. Any runs.
That's important. That's important for fantasy sake. So a lot of it depends on, does Bichette bounce back and can he steal at least 10 bases?
Yeah.
And does Luis Garcia not get platooned? That's, to me, the biggest kicker between the two. I'll take Luis Garcia.
Again, we're kind of laying out the pros and cons of each one. I've taken Luis Garcia in drafts. I've obviously taken Bo Bichette as well. So I'm fine with either one. But just laying out some things to think about if you're going.
I have before we go to the next debate, just a fun question. There is going to be a wrong answer, but right now there's no wrong answer. The Bichette hype train has been pretty ridiculous of late. Like, it's up there. So like, right now, his OBP or the ADP is 126. How high do you think that goes by the time we're in Vegas?
I don't think it goes that much higher. Okay. Honestly, is the hype train, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm not as tuned in.
Yeah.
Bichette is getting a ton of,
yeah, between social media and podcasts, you hear his name mentioned a lot right now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Should listen more. But I just don't know if there's, like, Bichette's, I don't know. He's not I feel like pitchers are going to get pushed up, and then
that's true.
There's only so much room for hitters to get pushed up. So Bichette's February ADP was 131 in RotoWire OCs. So yeah. Maybe it's been a last few days thing, but I don't know. I don't think it goes much more.
All right. Fair enough. What's your next player debate here as we head to the mound?
What did I do? Okay. This one's interesting. I don't really have a firm take on this one. I just figured we'd talk about it. It's two pitchers going basically at the exact same price, ADP 122, 123. Both kind of ended the season injured. It's Sonny Gray and Justin Steele. Sonny Gray is older. Sonny Gray looks healthy this spring, but did end the season with, I think, forearm inflammation, or at least that's what the Cardinals said, and didn't make his last start, where I believe for Steele it was forearm elbow as well, but Justin Steele did come back at least at the end of last season, and I think has already been anointed the game two starter in Tokyo. In Tokyo. So just interested to see what you think on those two guys going right next to each other and basically the exact same projection. I know I have drafted a ton more Sonny Gray than Justin Steele. My thinking there has been, I wanted to see what Justin Steele looks like in spring before I go there, but I'm starting to lean Steele a little bit too as well.
Yeah, I think pretty close to you on this one. I've been a Gray guy all over him last year, been in on him so far this year. I have a lot of SP3s on my roster. Being Sonny Gray, I feel like he just brings a very, very good floor when he's in the rotation. Like, back-to-back years of I believe over 180 innings, which is impressive because he missed the start of it was 166 last year because he missed the first month with that like was it knee injury or something. It wasn't elbow.
Yeah, hamstring.
But they 166. The strikeouts were back up. The ratios are great. Every single year, he pretty much has great ratios, which is a massive plus. And I think between the strikeouts, the ratios, and more often than not, the inning stability of the last couple of years, I've been leaning Sonny Gray. I'm with you. Justin Steele's been a guy I've been a huge fan of in recent years. But and last year, he had like the hamstring injury, and then he had the late inning, the late season arm injury that he never really like. He came back but didn't come back. If that makes sense, he threw like an inning here and inning there. Like doesn't really do it for me. So that's where I've been taking a lot of Gray, but I'm with you. Like watching, and this is where it gets bad, is you watch a couple Steele spring outings. They've already said, like, after the first outing, they're like, yep, he's our game two starter. Like, they're cool with him. Makes me wonder if it makes me wonder if I'm not giving Steele the love I should be giving Steele.
Right. Exactly. That's kind of where I'm leaning to.
Like, that's what I'm saying. The way you opened it up, I'm like, I'm with you, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to read too much into like spring training results or anything, but I do look at like, is this pitcher pitching healthy? What's the team saying? And if they're saying Justin Steele's going to start in Tokyo, like, they must feel pretty confident that his arm's okay, unless they're just completely full of you know what, which they may be. I don't know.
Well, let's remember the Dodgers named Sasaki the game two starter and not so fast anymore. But,
Happened to Sasaki?
A couple of days ago, they said that he's not guaranteed to get the start because he's ramping up a little slower than expected. He had that start the other night. If he has like one or two more good outings, he could get back into it, but he's not guaranteed it right now.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I pick Gray still here, but I agree. I probably should be giving Steele more love in this scenario.
Yeah, but really, you're drafting Jared Jones later. We'll talk about him.
Oh, we will talk about him. That is for darn sure. And I'm glad you're on board with that too, because it's a young player, and usually you're not with me in that kind of lockstep. All right, the last one I have here. This one also felt pretty interesting looking at this one, and it's two outfielders. You got Pete Crow Armstrong, who everybody loves, and he's having a pretty darn good spring, all things considered. His ADP is 142. And then you got Randy Arozarena coming off a down season with an ADP of 144, a guy I know you drafted recently. That's just steady. Even when he hit for a horrible average, just still a 2020 guy. Like, you can just pencil in 2020 and just pray he hits for a decent average. So where do you sit on these two? Do you got the steady Eddie in Randy, or do you have the up-and-coming guy that – it depends on where you read on what you should expect from PCA.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder which profile Bloomfield's going to take in this one-on-one.
The boring veteran.
I mean, yeah, dude, I am taking Randy. Like, yeah. I am taking someone in a down year that he had last year, still went 20-20 and outperformed his draft slot. Like, I'm going to take that every single time. I know he's in Seattle. It's not the best park in the world anymore. But I'm betting on a pretty firm bounce back for Randy. I'm taking the over on his 237 batting average. Randy Arozarena has been a target of mine throughout draft season. And PCA I have not ended up with. I just the question with I think PCA is that kind of late power. Is that gonna hold, or was that just like a 1 month fluke? We don't know. There were some swing changes to kind of back that up. And I get why folks are kind of banking on at least some of that late power to carry over into 2025. Could certainly be the case, and PCA out hits his 15 home run projection. Like, it's not that hard to see that happening, but it's just, for me, it's the track record of Arozarena. He's not even that old yet.
No, he's not.
And to get him off of a down, this is someone who is pretty consistently a top 60 pick going at 144, and I will take that all day.
And like, the other thing that stands out to me is a couple things. First off, you know, everyone's talking about PCA's growing. He's hitting the ball well, but still not really any power in spring. So he's not showing any, like, Arizona's where balls go to fly. Like, that's part of it. So you haven't really seen that. But if you're just a projections drafter, like some people are, you know, PCA has a batting average of 242 to 237. He has 7 left homers and 3 more stolen bases. Like, Randy's projection is just better than PCA, if you want to do the boring approach to it in that regard.
Yep.
And I'm with you. The other last factor I'll mention is PCA is supposed to hit ninth. Randy's hitting in the middle of the Mariners order. So, like, run production alone, Randy's got an upside there, given we know Justin Turner would support the fact the Mariners lineup's not great. But
was such a classic quote. I love that, man.
Yeah, speak the truth. Burned it down. Burned it down. That was glorious. That's veterans are allowed to do that. When you spend as much time in the dugouts as he has, he gets to. Rookies, not so much. Veterans, he's allowed to burn it down. That's fair.
But Kevin with a very astute point in the chat. Every year, I need to do that again this year. Yeah. Every year, somebody outside the top, I think top 12 rounds, pushes up post first round value. And every year I ask who is that going to be? Like, it's literally been every year for the last, I think, 8+ years. And Kevin says PCA is the potential answer to that question. If the power that we saw late from PCA carry over, because the speed is there, the playing time's there. Certainly understand that, that range of outcomes.
Yeah. I got somebody later on the show I'll talk about that could be that guy as well. All right. Anything else on that debate? I think that one was pretty cut and dry, but I just wanted to mention it because they are right next to each other.
Which
stands out quite a bit.
Good call out. Yep.
All right. Let's go to our targets. We got 3 targets each here, Ryan. So I'll let you kick things off here. I almost took this guy. I think he's a very, very viable option here. And if I took someone you like, take him. I can pivot to something else. I know I filled a lot of this out before you did.
Yeah, whatever. I woke up this morning and my back was feeling good. I stretched it out. Felt good. So I've decided to, not too much sitting on my computer today, working, moving around a little bit, staying loose. So it just felt in the mood to take some Christian Yelich at ADP 105. I know the back issue is still lingering and may linger throughout. Everything that Christian Yelich has said and done on the field so far this spring, and this is a spring performance that I'm looking at, not really for the stats. I don't care what we all know. Christian Yelich can wake up and hit. It's how does he feel after games? Is he playing in the field? And so far he's checking all those boxes. Now the back injury sure could come up later in the season. We don't know what a full 162 game season will do, but did get it taken care of with surgery in the offseason, is healthy now. And I think most importantly, Christian Yelich is a very good batting average source that's not going to hurt you in any other category. And as we kind of mentioned at the top, another round or two, that player does not exist anymore. So it's a little early for me to start taking risks at pick 105, but I have been doing it with Christian Yelich so far since I've seen him in the spring. So,
Yep. I love that pick. Love it. And then he just keeps coming out better and better. He's hitting regularly. He's played a game. He's in one of my news I'm working on. That's either coming out tonight or tomorrow. I haven't decided yet, 'cause it's kind of just enough news to maybe do another show or not. I don't know. But he's producing in the right direction. Let's put it that way. So I'm a fan of that one for sure. A fan that I know I'm a fan of, or a player I'm a fan of, I think you can kind of get behind this as well. It's Bubba Burgers himself, Jake Burger.
I don't have my graphic ready. What the hell?
It's all good. It's all good. It's a great combination of if you just like feel good stories, what he's been doing with his daughter's open heart surgery and hitting home runs with medical bands on his arm and stuff like. Sometimes you got to believe in karma once in a while, folks. That's a positive direction with Burger, but on the analytics side of it, which most of you really care about, one thing we talk, like, he's hit 250 in 3 straight years. I love being able to write that down. Just like pencil the certain, maybe he goes to 240, but still he's not going to like just fall off the rails unless something goes crazy. He's going to hit you 30 plus home runs. Run production numbers should be huge this year in that lineup. I saw some stat. I don't have it. It was in spring training, and again, it's spring training stats, but the Rangers are leading in hits, home runs, RBIs, and runs scored this spring as a team.
That could be a lineup that just goes off.
Yes, like night in and night out. And there's the Bubba Burgers for you right there. So it's one of those, like, if I can get a piece of that and I don't have to pay a lot for it, I'm a big fan, plus first base, third base eligible. Gives you that flexibility because you talked with Vinny P. There's guys that the position kind of starts drying up quick. And the last thing I'll mention for you, those that remember us doing our first base preview, if, again, you believe in projections, Burger's projections pretty much very similar with Pete Alonso, like the Austin Rileys of the world, Machado, like all these dudes, Matt Olson, all those corner infield guys that go early outside of stolen bases. If he's in lockstep with a lot of these guys. So give me all the Jake Burger I can get.
And look at this. For folks not watching, I've got the Safeway website up for Bubba Boogers. 7 5-star reviews. So that's, I mean, for food,
it's more than I have.
That's more than the show's gotten in quite a while. So Bubba Burger beating us there. But not to go too far off, but man, even inflation hasn't helped Bubba's Burgers. $16 for six frozen patties, man. Damn. That's tough. But
I need to go buy some of these and do like a video of me making them. Like I talk fantasy just to like to make it go full circle here.
Yeah, you should probably get some at the Airbnb, man. Some Celsius,
dude. High noon some Celsius, like Michael Cicchini, the chat. You guys got to reach out to Celsius, High Noon, and Bubba Burgers. The Bubba Bloom Pod, brought to you by
like all the shit that's bad.
Yeah, yeah. That would be hilarious. Oh, you man. See us all swagged out someday with like hats on.
Noon shirt, a Bubba Burger hat, and like some Celsius, like. Shorts or something.
Dude, it'd be bad deal.
Oh man,
you hit the wrong. Oh yeah, we're back to this. Yeah,
I gotta get back to the show at hand here. If I can even find it.
I got it.
I just feel the need to show a Bubba Burger whenever you start talking about him. All right, good. So my target. You can pull it up while I talk about my target. Is Tyler Stevenson. So I'm going to take the catcher, and you're not. I guess. Whatever, but yeah, you're on board with it. It's not only just Tyler Stevenson himself, who I do like, right? I took Tyler Stevenson way back when the first meatball draft back last August in the 11th round. I just think it's somebody we talked about the state of the catcher pool at this point to get a catcher that hits 255 or is projected to hit 255 at a position where batting average is, let's just say, not a strong suit. At catcher, Tyler Stevenson's a great pick. And he pairs it with, like, I think mid-teens, 20 home run power in that park. Yeah. So I just like Tyler Stevenson, but I also like where he's going in the draft and also, like, where he's going within the catcher position because I feel like he's one of your last chances to get a productive catcher. And you can do it at 150. So, that works.
Yeah, but I think he brings a really good floor to the catching position. With the ceiling, like you mentioned, with the power and stuff. So I love what he brings to the table, obviously. And I'll be honest, when you took him in that meatball draft, we joked about it, but that opened my eyes to digging in on him. That's what my kind of 2025 Tyler Stevenson love began, was going that direction. And then when I wrote up all my catchers for the Black Book, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute, this guy's actually pretty darn good. And it went from there. So fully on board with this one. It's just, if you can put together a full season, I think we're going to see don't know if I want to go top five catcher season, but a guy fully welcomed in the top 10. Like there should not be a debate about that because he's right around number 10 right now.
Yeah. So, and Kevin brings up a good point. A couple of years since the concussion issues, which is, great news for Stevenson, of course, but that stuff can linger too. So yeah, let's see that long awaited breakout full season from Tyler Stevenson. I think this is the year.
All right, you mentioned you mentioned PCA as one of those guys outside the top 12 rounds. I think Jason Dominguez could be one of those guys as well. Like yep. I know this might be the easy answer for many, but which means it probably doesn't happen. But I think we know the skill set's pretty undeniable with Jason Dominguez. Like we've seen it throughout the minors. How does it translate? Like they're talking about leading him off. That would obviously be a humongous boost with that Yankees offense. The dude got 2020 written all over him if he plays a full season. If he clicks into new gears, you go Jackson Churio and really bust out type thing. That's my point. I think he's got that ability to do the Jackson Churio kind of lift off. And Jackson Churio's just outside the first round right now. So yeah. I think when we look at Dominguez next year, this is one of those dudes that a lot of it comes down to, will he get to play towards the top of the order? Can he get the batting average up just enough to be productive? Because I think the power and speed's fine, and he could score a ton of runs in that offense. So I love Jason Dominguez. I think he's a great third outfielder or fourth outfielder if you're getting frisky. I just took him as my third outfielder in TGFBI. I want to get shares of Jason if I can, because I guess this is one of those breakout guys that you don't have to pay a premium for just yet.
Yeah, it sucks because I have not taken Jason Dominguez in a single draft yet, and I feel like I'm going to miss out on that. Like maybe it doesn't work out, but like at 132, if you've built a pretty strong, consistent core, you can take that shot. I mentioned taking a shot on like Christian Yelich's health. I think you can take an equivalent shot at Jason Dominguez for it all coming together for him in 2025. And I think playing time floor seems pretty safe. Yeah, maybe the batting average isn't there, but like, I think, I think the speed could be massive. Dude can fly.
Yep.
And you love the lineup. It's
like 20-30, hit 260, yep. 20-30 with 100 plus runs scored. Like, that seems very doable.
And who knows? Injuries, like, if he's in the top half of that lineup at some point.
Well, right now he's leading off a lot during spring. Like, they're trying, they've talked about leading him off.
Yeah. You've been hanging around with Curlin too much, but yeah.
Hey, that'll happen, unfortunately.
No, that's all a good right. point. It's a good point.
Who's your last target in this range?
Just thiefing from you. I know you're a big Tanner Bibee fan. He is the top, the earliest ADP in this group, but I think deservedly. So I think you're getting a rare combination of a really good floor with Tanner Bibee. I think he's one of the more consistent pitchers in the pool, given the volume and the age combination that we've seen from Tanner Bibee. I mean, the last two seasons, 163 innings, 174 innings, minors included, age 25 season. Tanner Bibee has shown he can do it in the majors, and who's to say he can't take an age 25 step forward, like, on a team that knows what they're doing with pitching. So I just think you get a awesome combination of strong floor with not really a boring pick, like somebody who I think could be a top 60 pitcher this time next season. I don't think he's like ace, but doesn't need to be at pick 100. I think if you have Tanner Bibee, even as if you wait on starting pitching and take Tanner Bibee as an SP2,
yep.
If you back him up with like another guy in this tier with a Logan Webb, Freddie Peralta, you're going to talk about Jared Jones as your SP3. I think Tanner Bibee's a perfectly fine SP2 in 15 teamers. So I love the price.
100%. I said it during our SP preview shows when we talked Tanner Bibee that he's on that trajectory, like, if you're stealing from the Guardians playbook, like you mentioned, they know how to develop pitching. This is what Shane Bieber did, folks. Like, this is it was a slow, and then boom, he's an ace. And the reason I like to also not just the team compare it to him, it's something I pointed out last season when I dug in and started planting my flag on Tanner Bibee. Everyone says his fastball's horrible, and it is, but so is Shane Bieber's. Like, this is how they pitch. They taught Bibee how to basically locate it more and then utilize his dominating off-speed stuff. That's what development of pitching does. And that's why I agree with you. I think Bibee is one of those pitchers that easily could take the next step this next year. And if he somehow throws 180 plus innings, you could be in for a big boy season out of him. And that's pretty good at ADP 100. I'm with you there.
And his fastball is really not even that bad. I mean,
it got better last year.
11% swinging strike. That's like average or a little bit better than average for a four seamer. And he threw it for strikes, 34% ball rate. Like,
what's the usage? Do you have that in front of you?
It was 43% usage last year, down from 47. So use it just a little bit less, but it's good pitch. I mean, average pitch.
Yeah. And it's a lot of it's just location with him. It just comes down to location, which is Bieber to a T. That's what Bieber was. All right, for me, it's Jared Jones. And like I said kind of earlier, it makes me kind of warm inside knowing that Ryan's on board with this as well, because as you guys know, Ryan doesn't like to take chances on young players that often. And
I hate the youths.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it's wrong, but like, it's just usually something that immediately goes, no, it's cool. I'll take like this other guy. I'll take Sonny Gray or something like that, instead of taking a chance on Jared Jones. But to me, like, there's no way I'm ever saying he's Paul Skeens. But on this team, that if we look at, they are developing pitching right now. You got Skeens, which by anybody could develop, to be fair. You have Jones, you have Bubba Chandler coming, who's got sent to AAA, but not for long. And when you look at Jared Jones, when he came up, like, he actually started the season with the Pirates. People might forget that. That's a big thing. He was utterly dominant for about...
I mean, he was like Skeens for the start of the season.
Yep, sub-4 ERA for the first 3 months. Then he got hurt in July, missed most of July and August. They also kind of said we're going to monitor, like, it's part of... He's hurt, but we're also monitoring his innings in a roundabout way. His September, October, when he came back, his 26 innings wasn't great. But we still saw this guy with some just filthy strikeout numbers that you can kind of take with you in this. Like, we saw a 19% K to walk in the first half, and an 16.5 in the second half because the walk rate went up a bit. But just some filthy swing and miss stuff from him. He's developing another pitch right now, which is going to make him even nastier this season. I think a year removed from this big season that we saw from Jared Jones, where he threw 122 innings, basically, So he can go 150 pretty much out the gate. Massive strikeout upside. Ratios should be pretty good. Like, I love this potential ceiling play from a guy like Jared Jones. He could be another guy that right now we're talking about with an ADP of 141. He's easily close to top 100 pick next year. I don't see how he couldn't be. Like, he could be a top 80 pick when all things are said and done. So he's got that ability to just jump off the page.
He could be a top 40 pick.
Yeah, he could. He's got the stuff. Like, him and Jones together, and if Bubba Chandler does anything, like, this Pirates team better spend money on bats next year.
At first, when I looked at Jared Jones, and I have changed my tune since I dove in, I saw someone who missed like 2 months with a lat, came back and wasn't that great. And I was like, I don't know, that scares the hell out of me. But Ray Murphy had made this point over, he wrote the forecaster box for Jones, also made this point on HQ Radio. Yeah, Jared Jones, once he came back, didn't really throw that many innings, threw his worst pitch more often when he came back. And I think the point could be made that it was just kind of like a spring training for Jared Jones. Just try and develop, try and work on your curveball. It doesn't matter. The Pirates were out of it. I don't care if you get blown up. Just try and throw your curveball more often. And if it gets hit, it gets hit. Whatever. We'll try again with your actual arsenal again next season. And I just think I need to look past those things for the potential of that first half Jared Jones being who he is. And again, if that happens, sky's the limit. So.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Michael Cicchini says he was working on his change in his curve in September.
Right. Like, good. I think he was just kind of messing around with stuff and seeing what works and doing that in major league games. So you can look at the skills and be like, oh, they weren't that great. But, like, dig a little bit deeper into what Michael's saying. It's like, yeah, that checks out.
A combination of working on the pitches, and he also got 30 more innings to give him to 120 on the year. So, like, it's a combination of things there, I think, to really get it going. And Kevin Hastings says, Jones, I drafted him in the Vegas Live main last year. Everyone stared at me. Vlad asked in the rotation ? I said, it sounds like it is to me, and was announced on Monday after. That's got to feel good.
Nice.
That's
got to feel real good. Especially in person. Yeah.
Yes. That's got to feel pretty dang good. That next Monday it pops off. That's pretty sweet stuff there.
Yeah. Yes, Vlad in the rotation.
Yes. All right. Let's talk about some fades here. Ryan, we'll kick it off. I think people by now should know we're fading these people, but who do you got?
Yeah, I'm not going to spend too much time. I've made my case against Tristan Casas. But just for those who maybe are new listeners, whatever, Tristan Casas going in at ADP of 133 based on like a good half season. I'm not totally over the fact that he couldn't swing a bat for much of last season. Felt like a car crash in his body, his words. I just don't know if that goes away. And I think it's a price, very, very big price to pay for somebody with a very generic vanilla profile of low batting average, good power. And you add on the injury risk with that. I think Tristan Casas is going too early in drafts this year.
Yep. I'm with you on him. Like, there's a world where I think we can all admit he could be just an absolute monster, but I think that percentage is a lot lower than the bust percentage in this one. Mine's pretty simple. I'm going to keep just pounding the don't draft Will Smith button. And
I thought you were back in on the guy, dude. What the hell?
No, I said he's getting closer. I said I'm getting closer to being back in on him. but the big reason now is, like, so he's got the ankle injury. He's got a knee injury. They flat out said they want to give him more rest. You start giving guys more rest. His counting stats weren't off the charts to begin with. You start giving him more rest, it becomes way more just basic to me. And that's my concern with Will Smith. So again, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but haven't been that wrong on him that often. So I'm going to keep fading Will Smith and draft Tyler Stevenson later.
Well, and I was just going to say that I just talked about Stevenson, but you've also got Shea Bangaliers and you've got Logan Ohapi. You've got, I still like JT Realmuto. I know you and Ben talked about him for a little bit today. There are other options at catcher. If you don't like Will Smith or if you're concerned about Will Smith, it's not like he's at the edge of a cliff at the position. There are good alternatives going after Will Smith. So,
Yep. Who's your next fade? Because it's a fade for me as well.
I gotta switch all these tabs. Oh, Xavier Edwards. Really for me, Xavier Edwards, I think, is somebody. So you can see in the projection here, it's bright green for 280 batting average, 33 bags, but it's 4 home runs, which, and this goes back to my whack-a-mole thing. Like, it's just really hard. You need to average. Do I have the team tracker up? No. In the team tracker that I have available for the patrons, you need to average in a 15 teamer, 21 home runs per player, per player. And that includes catchers. it's even harder in a 12 teamer. It's 22, 23 home runs per player. And then obviously the associated like RBI that go with that. It just Xavier Edwards sets you back so far in that you really need to, you can do it. You can make it work. You just really need to kind of plan out what you're doing in the power department and go from there. So for that reason, Xavier Edwards, pretty big fade for me.
Yep. I'm with you 100% on that one. That's a no for me, dog. In a similar vein, Bryce Turang is a fade for me because similar to Edwards, not a lot of power, slightly more. You might see it 7 home runs last year, so maybe a little more. He's projected for like anywhere from 8, 9-ish, 10, which isn't horrible. But for me, people are loving him because he got the 50 steals last year. I loved him last year because he was a lot cheaper than this. They got the 50 steals last year. Projections have him for 35. That's already a massive bump to kind of bring him down to another level. But unlike Xavier Edwards, he doesn't hit for average. He hit 254 last year, 218. And then his other MLB experience, 258. Those were his two MLB experiences. Never mind. He hasn't hit for average. Projections have him for 250-ish. And that's just an even bigger bust. Like, if I don't like Edwards already, or at least hits for average, I can't get behind Turang at all. Like, that just really takes it out of me. He has to steal all those bases, but he's not really helping you anywhere else. So he's a fade for me.
So for listeners out there who do find themselves in a situation where you need a lot of steals, who would you take over, or who would you take between, Bryce Turang and Xavier Edwards, if you had to, because they do give you steals.
I'll take Edwards. I'll take the batting average with Edwards. And we're looking at how many home runs he hit last year. Look at the games played as well. If he puts a full season together, maybe he gets you 5 or 6. Maybe.
Yeah. I think for me,
he can still be 40 plus. I'll take the average with Edwards.
Agreed. I think Bryce Turang, like, he sets you back everywhere else. Or at least Xavier Edwards will give you batting average, presumably, and some runs to go with that, and good stolen bases. So I would also take Xavier Edwards over Bryce Turang if forced to.
Yep. And I love your last fade. Can you lighten the crowd on this one?
It's Shane McClanahan. It's the double TJ. It's the, I think, Dr. Dave reignited an old argument old debate, I guess, you were having with somebody on Twitter from like months ago. Did that earlier today, but it was about Shane McClanahan and basically just like the success rate of guys coming off double TJs. And I know Shane McClanahan is throwing 99 or whatever, and I know he says he wants to throw 150 innings this year. That's all great, but if I miss on Shane McClanahan, it's not going to piss me off. Whereas like if I miss on Jared Jones, it's going to piss me off.
Yes, that is very fair. And I don't have a lot more to add. It's just two TJs. I got to see it. Got to see it before I can invest with all the other pitchers around it that I like quite a bit.
Yeah.
And this one kind of stings because I was already fading this guy. So if people like say, well, of course you're fading him now. Well, okay, that's fair. Like, I could pick someone else if I really had to, but I'm going to keep saying Grayson Rodriguez. I've been fading him the whole time anyways. We've never denied the skill set of Grayson Rodriguez. What I have fully backed is the fact he has never pitched a full season. That has never happened. Like, where you're drafting him, we haven't got the workload to justify a full Grayson Rodriguez season. We've seen a great second half. We've seen good windows. We've never seen a full season of Grayson Rodriguez, and looks like we might not see a full season again this year already, and it's March 6th. So he was already a fade for me. If you guys think that's a lazy answer, sorry, but that's guy. I could say Brian Wu. He's been a massive fade as well. If you want me to pivot, he looks great in spring on Thursday. I'll give you that, but he's always looked good. He's also had two massive near Tommy John scares in one season. So I'll just continue to pass on that one and take other guys around him like Jared Jones. And like Justin Steele and Sonny Gray, and take my chances there.
Yep, agreed. I'm with you. And you would have, I also agree, you would have said Grayson Rodriguez before the injury. I'll back you up on that one.
Yeah, I've been anti-Grayson for a long time. All righty, got a couple listener questions before we head out here. I highlighted a couple things in the chat throughout the show I want to ask you. So Michael C. has a fun one here that I appreciate, especially after that last Brian Wu comment. He says, Wu goes over under his ADP in innings. His ADP is 131. I'll go under.
Ooh, I'll say under as well. That's a good question though. I'll go under as well.
And then Jason says, and this is when we're talking about Dominguez, and I missed it live. Says, since his glove is terrible, does a Stanton injury get him DH at bats? Very good chance.
Agreed. That's in a very astute point looking at, and I don't think, I think Stanton is rejoining the team soon.
No.
He
he's scheduled for a second PRP injections, second PRP injections, plural, because he has two elbows getting them. and after the injections in New York, he's supposed to fly to Tampa Bay to begin his rehab process. And I think it was to Saul or like Jason DuPont or somebody on Twitter says, will his elbows be good enough to lean against the rail? So good.
Likely a DuPont comment.
Yeah, it was the perfect comment. All right. Listener questions from the Discord. And I got to navigate here because we had guys asking each other questions while we were asking listeners. Oh, this is a.
That's how the Discord goes, man.
I'm not knocking it. I'm just like, I got to navigate for a second here. Because like the first four. Okay. From Jim, or JM1000 says, are Luis Garcia's homers and steals from last year repeatable? If so, Garcia ADP or Semien? So do you think the power and speed is repeatable? We'll start there. I think it is, obviously, because
you do, of course. I do too. I do think what we saw from Luis Garcia last year is repeatable. Now, Semien or Luis Garcia?
Semien's like 105, I believe, off the top of my head.
Yeah, 108. 108 ADP to Garcia's 125. I'll still go Semien, but it's close. It's pretty close.
I'll go Garcia. It's not that I don't like Semien, but
no, I don't blame Garcia. You either. Yeah. I mean, Marcus Semien could very well. This could be the start of something not very good for Marcus Semien. So I get it. But
yeah, our buddy Aaron Gifts says, Dylan Cruz, Jason Dominguez, PCA. Which of these youngsters has the shortest leash if they start slow?
That's a good question. I will say Jason Dominguez. You disagree?
No, I agree. That's what's weird because I'm all in on him, but I agree out of the three. Like, I feel like Cruz and PCA. Oh, maybe.
But I don't know. Yeah. I'll add that, like, I also think that if they start slow offensively, I also think PCA has the best chance to start slow offensively. So as the question is phrased, if they all start slow offensively, I think Dominguez has the shortest leash, just being in that environment. Yankees, like Dylan Cruz, like the Nationals, I think you're going to play Dylan Cruz for as long as they can. And PCA, if he starts slow offensively, he's an elite defender. I think he's got some leash there as well. So,
yeah, I think I'm with you on that one. I'd probably rate it as Dominguez, PCA, Cruz. Like Cruz is feels like pretty agreed. Locked in. Maybe he's got the shortest leash.
Yeah. I think like Cruz would really have to suck for a while for the Nationals to be like, all right, pull the plug.
Kevin A says, has Bichette gone from fade to target?
No, he's gone from target to target.
I'm still not there just because the next pocket of... Well, no, it's not against Bichette. The next pocket of ADP, I like three shortstops in. So I've kind of skipped Bichette here to take a second baseman or a pitcher or something. So I don't think I even have a share of Bichette yet.
From target to bullseye, he's gone from.
There you go. BP says, sounds like Sandy will get the Chicago White Sox crochet treatment from last year. How does that affect him? Except it's the opposite. They're going to ramp him up slowly so he can pitch all his innings at the end instead of pitch all his innings and then do nothing at the end. So it's a little different.
But it's the same, but it's just, the order of it, I guess, will be a little bit different. But it's a good point because if you're just, and we haven't talked about Sandy at all. He is in this group, right?
Yep, he is.
The hell is he? 135. Yep. We can all look at how the velocity looks this spring, how great everything looks and that sort of thing. How many wins can Sandy Alcantara presumably get in Miami? Like, honestly, especially with this news that they're going to crochet him, at least early in the season. So, like, you may go 2 months without a win from Sandy Alcantara, and that matters. And is Sandy going to be throwing? I mean, the beauty with Sandy was he goes 8-9 innings if he's pitching well. And yeah, you could have three runs of support and still get the win that way. Is Sandy going to do that again in his first season back? I don't think so. So like, even if Sandy pitches six innings, gives up two runs, how often is that going to be a win in Miami? Like, this dude may only get like six wins, and that matters.
especially at this point in the draft.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I think that's like a big deal. Like, so if I just, I'll just to make an example of that, like in my little spreadsheet here, if I give Sandy 12 wins, 115 innings, 12 wins, he's the number 39 starting pitcher, according to projections. If I drop that down to 7 wins, Sandy goes from the number 39 starting pitcher to the number 69 starting pitcher without changing anything else in his projection, innings, ratios, whatever. Those lack of wins, I don't think that's being talked about at all. I think it's a great question, especially with the news that they are going to crochet him.
Yeah, I was very in on Sandy before the news. I'm definitely not as excited anymore for a couple of reasons, not just the wins you mentioned. It's just the adage, like, I'm not saying he's going to get hurt, but any pitcher can get hurt. I want that guy, if he's healthy, throwing out the gate. I don't want to toy with it. I don't want to risk anything. Like, I want to get maximum value once we start, because any guy can get hurt at any moment. He's coming back from an injury. I don't want him to be like getting three innings, getting hurt. Give me like six if he's going to get hurt. Like, you know
what
I mean?
Remember, like, last year, Crochet, like, people were cutting him. People weren't starting him because he was only going 3 to 4 weeks. So are you going to draft someone at 135 and you're not going to start him for a month or two? Like, that's the same as a stash.
You're basically stashing him. Exactly. That's what I was like. Cause I remember I cut Crochet in some 12s. Like, it's tough. It's real tough to roster that when you need wins. It's like, if you're in an overall competition, you like can't draft Sandy. If they stick to the rules.
I agree. And I think the Rays haven't said this, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Rays do the same thing with Shane McClanahan.
They should. Like, in reality. And I think, you know, you see like Sandy throwing this hard. Yeah, he can throw the hard for 3 innings. That's fine. Like, that actually works. So it definitely has got me not as excited about Sandy as I once was for fantasy. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Last question. Yeah, very good question. Last question we have here from Ben Tidd, and this is a tongue-in-cheek, and Ben can just go sit on the sidelines after this.
Yeah, dude.
Why is Sonny Gray's ADP 122? It's because he's good.
So, well, I'll answer like a douchebag. So ADP stands for average draft position, and so 122 is the average of when he's been picked in drafts in the time range that we're looking at for this sheet. So in 10 drafts, on average, Sonny Gray has been taken at 122. So that would be why his ADP is
122. That's a statistician. That's statistician on statistician crime right there. That's what that just was. That was.
So Ben thinks that's late. Is that correct? 122?
I think, or do we not know? That's too early. I don't think he's
too early.
I don't think he's a Sonny Gray guy. I could be wrong. I don't think he's a Sonny Gray. I could be totally wrong. I could be misreading. I could forget something we talked about. I do a lot of shows, so I apologize.
I answered his question straight up. So I answered why his ADP is 122.
Yeah, you definitely did. All right. Well, that'll do it, my friend. We're going to wrap it up there. Any final thoughts as we finish pocket one, 100 through 150?
I think we covered it well. I'm probably not taking a closer here. I'm probably taking one or two of the starting pitchers that we liked. But like you said, Bubba, probably focusing on bats and trying to get some of those last few good batting average guys that don't hurt you in other categories, while probably also trying to grab my second catcher in this group as well. That would be kind of the general game plan for me from 100 to 150.
Yep, some definitely good pitchers to take right here and get your catching taken care of for sure. That would be priorities in this range. We'll be back with you guys next week for 4 episodes, the rest of the pockets. 4 pocket episodes will get you 150 through 300 and beyond. Coming up with you guys next week. Hope you guys all have a great weekend. Make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Andrick, and until next time, this is Bubba the Bloom, episode 220. Catch y'all later.